It can be hard to eat healthy during the holidays. With all the prepping and planning and cooking for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and other large family get-togethers, I know firsthand it can be easy to forget to prepare nutritious, healthy meals for yourself. This holiday season, you might be looking for nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Skip the stress of meal prepping over the holidays with Factor. Choose from 35-plus weekly flavor-packed, fresh, never-frozen meals that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, all delivered right to your door and ready to eat in 2 minutes. With Factor, you can rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. We offset 100% of our delivery emissions and source 100% renewable electricity for our production sites and offices. This November, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered right to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/BA2022pod50 and use code BA2022pod50 to get 50% off. That's code BA2022pod50 at factormeals.com/BA2022pod50 to get 50% off. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left.
Way back. Gone. All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is not only the master of fantasy baseball, dynasty baseball, redraft baseball, robots that play baseball, all of these different things. He's also winning the Toolshed mock draft right now, according to his calculations, if I'm not mistaken. Are you still number one, Dylan?
I am, but, you know, it changes every time. It can, and it really means nothing. But it's a nice benchmark just to see, you know, how you're doing in certain categories.
Absolutely. And you're not too far off from being on the clock. In fact, you're a couple picks away from being on deck there next to the turn. So I'm in last, I believe, in points, or close to it. Second to last. We've drafted completely different styles of teams. And I think, you know, Dylan certainly has a strategy. I like to think that I have a strategy, whether that's accurate or not. That's up for you to decide. But I've drafted a much younger team. I've gone very heavy on upside. That's not to say that I don't have some major leaguers, and that's not to say that Dylan doesn't have some upside in his team. But I think you look across the board, you've drafted, you know, very much a redraft sort of style team.
Yeah, I have. I don't know if you want to get into sort of how the strategy kind of worked its way out, but
sure. Let's talk a little bit about your general approach and just this approach in general. And I think, you know, obviously you got some great picks there at the top. You were blessed with the second pick overall in this draft, and you took Julio Rodriguez. But let's talk a little bit about the build in general going down and sort of what your primary targets are. Cause you're still very young, you know, in your first seven rounds.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing, and it applies to any dynasty startup, is like, obviously know your league, right? So, in this league, it's 14 teams. Yeah. There's only one catcher, which is, you know, a bit of a wrinkle that from what I'm used to. Sometimes I have like two catcher leagues with like 20 teams. So that means obviously that there are 14 catchers that are going to be drafted, which is going to be completely different than, you know, if there are 30 catchers to be drafted. So, sure. You know, you kind of do a mental adjustment in your head of like what replacement level or whatever kind of adjustment you do for that already. It's also batting averages of OBP, so obviously that's going to make a difference, and it saves instead of hold. So I kind of knew that I wasn't going to go too heavy on the catchers, which I like to do in redraft. I don't like to get stuck with a bad catcher. So that kind of, you know, it kind of relieved my mind a bit there. So anyway, that was sort of the preamble. I had second pick. So Acuna was obviously the first pick. And I really wasn't sure who I wanted. Obviously, you can't really go wrong with Julio Rodriguez, who I ended up taking, or Corbin Carroll, Bobby Witt Jr. I remember who was fifth. Jordan Alvarez is in there, and, yep, you know, Tatis is in there, Soto's in
Riley
there.
Riley Green in the fourth. Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually was thinking of taking Shohei Ohtani because I wanted to kind of be controversial, have something to talk about, but I just decided to go with Julio. I don't have Julio anywhere in any of my leagues, and so, you know, I wanted to see what it felt like to take him. But, I mean, my first couple rounds, it's sort of you just take kind of young bats with, like, multi-category eligibility type of thing where they're going to get you know, not just home runs, not just like a Pete Alonso type, but someone, you know, who's also going to get batting average and something. So I have Bo Bichette, I have Rafael Devers. That was kind of how I started. And then because I do track how the projections are, I kind of saw I was near the top because I saw, you know, like you're going young. Chris Blessing was kind of going young. And so it's like they're, you know, two guys are not, don't look like they're going for it, quote unquote. And so, you know, pretending this is a real draft, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to change gears and start focusing more on the current year's production than taking, a high upside prospect. So that's kind of how it shook out for me. So when did you decide that you were going to go like prospect heavy?
I don't know if it's necessarily gone prospect heavy as much as it is like, I try to take the best player on the board in terms of what I think overall long-term impact is going to be. So, like, I started with Spencer Strider at 13. I thought he was the best player on the board. Gunnar was an option there. Seager was an option there. Ellie De La Cruz was an option there, as was Wyatt Langford. I took Wyatt Langford at 2-2. Being the 13th pick, I then got the turn there. Gunnar and Seager, who Shelley took, were both right there for me. Whether either of them was available, I probably take Gunnar over Langford. I don't know if I take Seager over Langford, actually. I think Wyatt Langford is the number one fantasy prospect right now. I don't know if he's the number one real-life prospect, but I think if you just look at production, the type of underlying like hitter data that we have access to, in terms of his bat to ball skills, his approach, his ability to get on base because of that, his power, and he does have the ability to run. And, you know, if he does end up in this lineup early next season, which I think is a possibility, he's going to be in a great lineup situation as well, and probably for years to come. So I just look at Langford as a guy that could blow it up and be like rookie of the year, or, you know, one of the best young hitters in baseball over the next 3 or 4 years. And we've seen how the guys like that can go into the first round really quick. So that's why I went there. I went back to Evan Carter. I love Evan Carter. I would actually take Evan Carter over Churio probably in most dynasty formats right now. And I do like Churio a lot. I just think, like, you know, we saw a little bit of it obviously in the playoffs, but he's so mature for guys. This was baseball 20 season. I think people forget that because he turned 21 late in the year. He's going to be 21 most the next season. Sky's the limit with a guy like this. I think there's more power to come. He's a good athlete. He's going to play in the field. The hit tool's super advanced, and his on-base ability is great. He's going to score a lot of runs. Could be a guy that, you know, maybe is one of the top 2 to 3 spots in this Texas lineup. We saw that at times during the playoffs. So it's like, for me, I think that Carter's another guy that maybe I took him a little higher than others would have taken him. But like Tristan Casas went a few picks later. Tariq Skubal, Royce Lewis, who I like a lot. I grabbed him in another dynasty league. He was another guy that I was considering right there. All have like plenty of risk attached as well. So for me, I liked Carter there. I went with Adley Rutschman in the fourth round. I agree with the catcher thing. I just think Adley is such a unique case where there's a lot of power. There's hitability. He's going to play every day. Good lineup situation, obviously, as well with him. I can see people picking nits with that pick a little bit with a catcher where he was versus taking another pitcher. I went a little bit younger. I had Horner in the fifth, who's young, but not crazy young. Zach Geloff in the sixth, who I just like the overall production. not a great lineup situation, but he's probably going to hit at the top of that lineup. I don't have too many questions about that. Some power, some speed. Counting stats will be fine. Went Dylan Cruz in the seventh. Tanner Bibee in the eighth, which I like the combo of Strider and Bibee there. I don't fret too much in a dynasty startup about getting too many starters. I like to take my starters a little bit later. I'm actually fine taking older starters and having a younger lineup. That's typically how my teams are kind of structured. And then I'll pick my spots with some pitching prospects or some good values on younger players once you get into sort of the bench rounds. And then I went really young with like the stretch of Roman Anthony, Walker Jenkins, Colson Montgomery. They're all top 10-ish prospects for me. They were hanging around for a really long time. I think Anthony's impact is maybe a year away. Jenkins might be a few, but I'm okay with that. It's a decent trade chip. Colson Montgomery might be in the big leagues next year. And then like kind of finishing off like from here on out was Springer, Nate Lowe, Alec Baum. I took Sandy Alcantara knowing that my team is a little younger and I could take a chance like that there in the 15th. I like the value on it. And then TJ Friedl, who's one of my favorite players, frankly, like I think he's one of the more underrated players in the game right now. Does a lot of things well. There's some power, some speed. It's a good team dynamic and, you know, good bat to ball guy, can do a lot of things well. So guy that can score a lot of runs and maybe hit it at the top of the lineup. So I feel like there's a lot of upside here, but I don't think any of my prospects are all that far off from impact. And I think there's some guys that the projections probably don't necessarily know how to weight their contribution next year. So, or even the year after. So is it more of a year two, year three team? Absolutely. But I don't feel like in terms of what I have through 16 rounds right now with whatever, another nine remaining, that I'm that far off from, you know, where I need to be and have a lot of upside. I like teams in year one where I can look into year two and see things getting better.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking just before the thing how you took Alcantara in the 15th, so like pick 209, and Jesse Roach took DeGrom 205, and I think that's way too late for both those guys. I just, yeah. In a mock, it's not sexy to take like Sandy Alcantara or Jacob DeGrom because, you know, we're not actually going to wait a year. So I kind of eschewed taking those guys, and I just went with, since I was already on the road to like trying to get the best projected team for 2024.
Sure.
That's what I did. But I really think you got a great value on Alcantara there.
Yeah. And I feel like I have, like, we would go a little bit deeper if this was actually a startup and we would have some more bench rounds, and you know, I would be able to take some shots on maybe some post hype guys that could fill some roster spots that some of these, you know, keep it warm for a year or so. And you could even at that point go with some older guys to backfill too, that people are maybe scared off, not by the production, by the fact that they're 32, 33, 34, 35. And it's kind of okay. It's like, I'll take a guy like that in a league like this if I have some high upside prospects earlier, knowing I can either package them together for an upgrade, or, you know, if they're really good prospects in this league, I got guys who I think are all top 10-ish hitting prospects. They have a pretty good track record in recent years of being hits more often than not. And sometimes one of those guys can really blow up and all of a sudden you're sitting on a guy that would have gone in the top 10 picks if you drafted again the next year. So that's kind of what my goal is in year one, is to just have as many good players as I possibly can, maybe backfill a little bit, but try to get some upside, particularly early, and you know, see how things manifest. Cause I feel like I can always trade prospects for the most part, because I can usually find more. Every year there's a new draft class. Every year there's a new IFA class. There's a new high minors pop-up guy like Vinny Pasquantino, or a low minors pop-up guy. You know, there's always somebody like that. And you just got to be out there for the taking, go get those guys, and you can backfill even if you trade a lot of your high-end prospects for right now when moves.
100%. Like, this best projected team means nothing, because you could just trade Langford for Luis Robert or like Garrett Cole or something, and everything changes. So you'd see how the year is shaking out, how the stats are shaking out, and then you can just pick and choose who you want to take. So yeah, obviously, you know, having the highest value asset quote unquote, is the way you want to go. So
absolutely. Let's take a quick break here and then we'll talk a little bit more about strategy. What do you say, Dylan?
Let's do it.
All right. And we're back. All right. That was a nice break. I hope whatever product JJ was pitching to you this time was worthwhile and can fulfill your holiday wish list. Anyway, but I think like this is a good lesson in general. I'm doing a dynasty startup draft simultaneous to this. It's much deeper into the draft. We're in round 30 something out of 50 rounds. 16 teams, and it's funny because I feel like there's some things that don't necessarily happen in a real draft that happen in mocks, you know, and some of it is like not you in particular, but some people drafting for like the best team, and I don't know if they would necessarily draft like that if they were in a startup, and the rules obviously will dictate a lot of that too. Like this league that I'm in obviously is an OBP league, so that kind of changes the dynamic of who's what. I took Evan Carter in the second round in that draft because like OBP Evan Carter, I mean, he could be a machine, you know. The walk rates alone are gonna float me. I went Royce Lewis, Yuri Perez, Josh Lowe, Matt McClain. Kyle Tucker was my 112 pick. I got Xander Bogaerts, Gleyber Torres a little bit later down the board, Yandy Diaz. I love this team. This team was kind of the same thing. I went upside kind of early. Was able to get maybe a few more MLB guys because I think some prospects went a little bit earlier than they went in that mock. And was kind of able to find that nice niche of like 23 to 26 on a lot of these guys. And then kind of backfill with some vets and some higher upside pitching prospects and pitchers too. Just guys that maybe had a down year or were injured and could potentially come back or just aren't sexy like, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez or Amaro Kelly. But those guys can contribute, especially if you're in a 16-team league. You know, innings are at a premium in any dynasty league past 12, frankly. So starters matter. And having a variety of starters to play the matchups is always something that I'm trying to do. So for me, it's more about decent quality, but getting more quantity from those groups, because I was looking at draft boards last year and like Blake Snell went like the eighth round in a lot of leagues. You know, it's like there's a lot of these pitchers that people kind of write off after a down year or an injured year, and then they come back and have a great year, and you're drafting guys in the first round that maybe don't necessarily return the same value. Like I was a guy that drafted Corbin Burnes all over the place, and I think he was SP20 or something in the end, you know, and there were a handful of guys I could have gotten in later rounds that it's like, I could have used that on a hitter, you know? And I think with dynasty in general too, I personally just have a greater comfort in investing in hitters over the first like 3 to 4 rounds more often than not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I went against what I normally do, and I drafted more pitchers than I normally would. And it was because pitchers were starting to go in this league, the mock we were in quite early. And since I was kind of quote unquote going for it, I was running out of pitchers who were going to contribute. So my first pitcher I ended up taking was Pablo Lopez. And then, so that is fascinating of any dynasty startup is just seeing how the dynamics are. And when I compared, when you were showing me who your first couple picks were, it was like you were in the 10th round and you're picking guys who are all gone in our league by the 5th round. Like you were getting what I was thinking is incredible value in your startup, the one that the real league.
Well, yeah. So. And the point, and it's a league for money too. But I think like, if you look at it, there were younger players with higher upside that were drafted in the second round. Churio went, I just had it up here a second ago. Caminero went in the second round. There were two pitchers taken in the first. Strider went 113. Cole went 116. There wasn't another pitcher taken until 3-2, Louis Castillo followed by Logan Webb. So there were full rounds where pitchers weren't getting taken. And I just think that the way the dynamic works often in a startup is very different, especially if like, nobody else is going to see it. As funny as that is to say, like, I think that people are much more apt to go chalk in a mock than they are necessarily in like an actual real draft. And you know, and when you get non-writers, sometimes, you know, they may actually have different values on players than what the general consensus has, which isn't necessarily wrong either. You know, there's a lot of really good fantasy players that make their hat beaten up on experts, right? I think the dynamic of a mock versus a real draft is apparent too, even just with the sense of urgency. Like I said, like, you know, we're in round 34 right now, and we started 24 hours before the mock did. And that mock is in round 15, 16, you know, everybody's paying attention in the draft.
No, it's just fascinating.
I think that's the thing with mocks. I don't love mocks. I think it's fun if it's a controlled group. Like if it's like three or four of us, like when we do like our like FYPD mock or something like that, it's all internal. It can be a little interesting because people are explaining like picks and stuff like that. It's in a set dynamic. But more often than not, the more I do this, the less interested I am in mock drafts in general. But or what even happens in a mock draft. I'm starting to sound like one of those NFBC guys that gets everybody angry. I don't mean to do that.
Well, I think the mocks are extremely valuable if they're taken seriously, which we all are taking it seriously. I think they're hugely valuable to you know, like the readers and all that, because it, you know, helps provide valuations for these players. Like, where do you take Yuri Perez compared to Zach Gallen, like that type of thing. But yeah, it's just I just can't believe how different the two drafts are. Like this one that we're in together, in the first 10 rounds, I was looking at it, we have 95 hitters and 45 pitchers were taken. So like a 2-to-1 ratio of hitters to pitchers, which I think is just so high for a dynasty startup from like my experience of what I've been in. And maybe it's because we're seeing how pitchers are so like, so many are so injured. Alcantara, DeGrom, all these things, they're not available anymore. That they're so valuable because they're few and far between. Like that's what we're seeing in like NFBC and all that. I don't know, or it's just the pendulum is swinging. I was looking at your naming like the pitchers in your other draft. There were only a few in the first couple of rounds, but I was looking at ours, round 3 and round 4. So picks 29 to 56. These are the pitches that were taken: Yuri Perez, Luis Castillo, Corbin Burns, George Kirby, Zach Gallen, Tarik Skubal, Grayson Rodriguez, Tyler Glasnow, Kevin Gausman. Like so many pitchers were taken in the first like 50 picks, which is not the experience I'm used to seeing. So,
which is why I pivoted a little bit harder probably into the prospects because they kept on dropping down the board. And I was like, you know, I'm looking at Razzball's player rater from last year, right? Up at the top, not a lot of surprises, Strider and Cole. Then it's Snell, Gallen, Zach Eflin, then Luis Castillo, Kevin Gausman, Zach Wheeler, Justin Steele, Kyle Bradish, George Kirby, Logan Webb, Chris Bassett, Logan Gilbert, Clayton Kershaw at 15, Framber Valdez, Pablo Lopez, Corbin Burns, Kodai Senga, Freddie Peralta, Merrill Kelly, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Shohei Ohtani, and Sonny Gray. And then Eduardo Rodriguez is 26. Even as far as like right now production, it's really hard to predict pitcher value from year to year. I think it's much easier to predict hitter value from year to year. And when you're looking at a dynasty, I think that's what you're looking at, because these guys can change so quickly, like on a dime. Like I traded for in season this year in my 30 team, I traded for Shane McClanahan and he got hurt the next start. Shane McClanahan is worth significantly less now than what I traded for him in, you know, weeks before that injury. It's just the nature of the beast, you know, and guys can fall off for 2 years and you don't hear anything about them as they're rehabbing and they pop back up. It's just the nature of the beast when it comes to pitching. And I think like for me, I acquire pieces in these drafts, and then I trade for pitching. Like, that's the easiest thing for me to then trade for. You know, going into a season thinking guy's healthy, make that deal. You know, or I'm going to bank on this guy being healthy and having a good year. And even that can blow up in your face, as we've seen. But I think that's how you have to handle it. I think overvaluing pitching in a dynasty startup early, it can lead to some bad teams. Not everybody can do that. You know, if you have a whole draft board of people doing that, it's going to blow up on most of those teams. You'll have three or four that are successful. And then from year to year, that can fluctuate greatly. You know, I think you need depth. You need depth. It's just like a major league team. You need more starters than you can possibly have, especially the deeper the league.
So depth is probably the most underrated thing in a dynasty league, and even in redraft.
Yeah.
That is overlooked. Totally agree. Obviously. I mean, we talked about this, about how to build a pitching staff in dynasty, that like there's going to be, in a 15 team league, you know, there's five teams in the bottom five, and then they're not going to want to hold on to Charlie Morton or Clayton Kershaw or
Merrill Kelly.
Like, Merrill Kelly.
And the price is going to be high.
You find the guy who's actually performing that year, and who probably is not going to play another couple years, and then you just trade for them. And you can trade something cheap. You can trade a second rounder next year and an FYPD type of thing, and get the guy who's producing. Totally agree. You don't need to draft pitching and just wait to see, you know, who's performing well. And speaking to your thing about how the fluctuations are of pitchers year to year, in our draft, I'm looking at it here, round eight, these pitchers went back to back, and I don't think you ever would have predicted this 2 years ago, 1 year ago, as Walker Buehler pick 102 and then Cole Reagan's 103.
There you go.
So Cole Reagan's not on anyone's radar, of course. And then Walker Buehler, like, who would think he dropped to round eight in a year where he's coming back from injury? You'd still think he'd be in, you know, the top five or something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's the nature of it. And like, Walker Buehler could be one of the five or six first pitchers taken a year from now, if he has a great year in 2024. Right. And I was just thinking about, you know, like a similar thing where, like, you know, you look at, you know, Tarek Skubal, Tyler Glasnow, right? Just to name a few. Would it be that much of a stretch if Kyle Bradish had a better year than either of them? Both of them?
No, not at all. Last, I mean, year. Obviously. Exactly. You did last year.
what you would expect the asking price to be on Kyle Bradish in a dynasty league versus the asking price on Tyler Glasnow or Tarek Skubal right now, despite the success of Bradish, I bet you the asking price would probably be higher on both.
Yeah,
I can't guarantee it, but it wouldn't shock me, because he's just not, it's not as sexy of a name despite the production. You know, it's like we still draft so much on upside with pitchers. And it's probably the place where gambling on upside can likely, you know, be like, you know, fool's gold more often than not. It's just the fluctuations from year to year are great. And like, there's rare guys, like there's obviously like the Striders, the Coles. I'd put Zach Wheeler probably into that category right now. I think Zach Allen's probably in that category right now. Like, Blake Snell was number three. Would you gamble on Blake Snell being a top five pitcher again next year? Some of the underlying stuff and the commands, just the nature of Blake Snell.
I think if he wasn't a free agent, I probably would. But that, just the idea of him signing a huge contract, and usually they come out sluggish in their first year. Maybe that's anecdotal. But like, I had Blake Snell on that main event team that won. So I can't speak ill of Blake Snell.
Ill of Blake Snell. Blake Snell or George Kirby?
I would go George Kirby. And this is actually one of my points I was going to say, is that you want to give yourself outs with players. So if you take Blake Snell and he has a bad year, if he has like a 155 whip or something like that with a four ERA, his value tanks. If George Kirby has a bad year like that, his value is still going to be good, because he's young. They'll just chalk it up to a mulligan. Like, his value will still be retained. It'll be much easier to trade George Kirby than Blake Snell next year if they had a terrible year this year. Yeah. So you got to do that type of that calculus. I know it's difficult, but like if I take Max Scherzer, who I'm planning on taking, spoiler alert, when I have my 16th round pick, if he has a terrible year, if he's injured and doesn't pitch, which is quite likely and quite possible, his value is almost zero. But if you take someone like, I don't know, I can't think of anyone, Braxton Garrett or Mackenzie Gore, both who are available, and they have middling years, 1.25 whip and 4.4 ERA, like they'll be much more valuable than Max Scherzer next year. Mm-hmm. So if this was a real draft, I would not take Max Scherzer. I would take Braxton Garrett or Mackenzie Gore. But because, you know, it's a mock and I'm going for it, and Max Scherzer is projected to do very well this year, and I still think he's very good.
You're playing your role.
I'm playing my role, exactly. I would take I'm going to take Max Scherzer. But as I'm saying, you want to give yourself outs. You want to not commit, overcommit. And like, I don't want to have Scherzer and Sale and Kershaw on a startup. No. Because, you know, you can be in big trouble if, you know, things fall that way. And it's not even that improbable. So you want to always give yourself outs. You want to always give yourself paths. You can go younger. You can go for it. Like, you want to always have like that fork in the road, that ability. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just went on a rant.
No, it was perfect. No, I agree. You know, I think those are all elements of like your dynasty build strategy that you can take it a variety of different ways. I think that's the thing, is there's no set way. Like, I think years ago, people very much believed that you had to like draft or redraft team if you wanted to win in dynasty. And I think over time that was proven incorrect. Like, you can draft a younger team, make trades, acquire players, wait a year or two, and things can start to really come together, you know, in a rush. You know, especially if you have a young group of players who are all about to break free or in at the around the same time, all of a sudden, you know, your team can look very different in a year, and the trade offers that you're getting can be very different as well. And that's kind of the situation you want to be in, right? Like, I feel like you can kind of make your own destiny. I think the other thing too that I'll say here is, the longer I've done this, the less I am likely to fall into like what consensus says. If I want a player, I go and get the guy. If I think that I've done the research and, you know, I know the player, I know the skills, I think he's going to be this, go get the guy. Like, I, you know, I think sometimes people get scared of like, if I make this pick, it's going to be shocking. People could think I'm crazy. Sometimes those are the best picks. It's baseball, man. Like, a year from now, half the stuff we're saying is going to sound like the most insane thing you've ever heard, because it's going to be completely inaccurate. So go out there, have some fun, and like, you know, play the game, figure it out. I think that's the big thing. Like, I, you know, more the picks that I've regretted in my life have more often than not been times I haven't trusted my gut, and I've gone with like who is ranked higher on consensus boards, you know.
Yeah, I mean, especially in dynasty, like you can't even really veto, unless there's collusion, you can't really veto any dynasty trades. I mean, the two trades that I can think of that were the most shockingly one-sided at the time, it seemed, have actually flipped to be the other way a few years later. And it's like, looking back, going, I can't believe how like up in arms we were about that trade when it actually has flipped to be the other way. It's you never know. You never know. Value changes constantly. I mean, that's why we love the game. You try to sustain a winning team over a long period of years is very, very, very difficult. And that's what kind of makes it fun. That's what makes trying to solve that puzzle so engaging.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Well, I will wrap this sucker up. Say goodnight to the people. And we'll be back in another week. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.